You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13. This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
I'm joyful and fun.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2.
That's cool, man!
On 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. Well, that game yesterday was something else. Devin Booker was amazing after a really pedestrian game three, where I think he scored 10 points. But, Peter, you mentioned it when we went to break. The guy had five fouls and purposely fouled somebody. I mean, he wrapped his arms around him and it wasn't called. And only a heads-up play by Antetokounmpo, who continued the play.
What a sneaky great play that was.
Oh, it was sneaky great because he could have just – everybody saw it was a foul. Even Breen said in real time, and Booker fouls out. Well, he didn't foul out. I mean, somebody on that crew has to answer to how's that not called a foul?
No. Every time you see it – so listen, when you see the play in replay, you're like, okay, I can sort of understand a world in which they could have missed it. But here's the problem, Michael. The eye test was such – that everyone in the world who's ever watched basketball saw it and went, that's always called a foul. That play is always called a foul.
Well, he was trying to foul him.
And he had his arm on his back, one arm on his back, and the other one hitting his arm. And by the way, it did cost them. I mean, Devin Booker went on to score big buckets after that.
It also cost them when he got the fifth foul and Monty Williams kept him on the bench for a while because that allowed the Bucks to, you know, chew into the 9-point deficit. So now we'll talk more about it amongst the three of us in just a moment, but let's bring in the expert, our good friend Tim Legler, basketball NBA analyst for ESPN. Tim, it's Michael, Don, and Peter. How you doing?
Gentlemen, I'm doing great. We had a good game last night. It was entertaining.
It was entertaining. So let me just start off where we were just talking. How do they miss the call on Booker, which would have been the sixth foul? I mean, how do you defend that if you're the officials on the court?
There is absolutely no way you can defend it. It's inexcusable, period. And you know, look, when people see something like that, it's just so blatant. When a guy's got five fouls and he's a star player, and he's the best player on a particular team, and that's not called, you just ask yourself, like, what in the world could you possibly have been looking at? Because you could have called either foul. You could have called him with his left hand, basically raking down on his arms, Drew Holiday's arms as he was trying to shoot, and then clearly his right hand was wrapped all the way around his back and was pulling on his like upper back area at the same time. It was really a foolish play by Devin Booker to even attempt to get involved in that with what was at stake. So it was really a miracle he got away with it. But no, there's no excuse. There's no possible way an NBA caliber official or really any high-level official, even a college official, could possibly miss that call. Because when you are seeing a situation where you have a breakaway-type situation or a fast break with numbers, which they had, your sole purpose, really, is to make sure you protect the person that's going to attempt a shot at the rim. And in that case, it's not even like a judgment call. That's just an obvious one because it looked like Booker tried to foul him. So I don't know. I don't know how to answer that. To me, it's inexcusable.
And Tim, this was brought up during the broadcast by Jeff that, you know, clearly they're calling it different than they would in the regular season. And, you know, Breen said that's because they play differently in the postseason. But didn't it look like during that game that the players really didn't know how to play it, that it almost seemed like it was a little over the top, that the adjustment was just almost beyond the players even understanding what's a foul and what's not? Did it get away from them last night?
Yeah, and see, the problem with that is, look, it's always existed that it's going to be more physical in the postseason. You understand that. But the problem is the league has changed to such an extent that the regular season has taken so much of the contact out of the game that the contrast between a game in which they really let you play and what a normal regular season game looks like is such a contrast that I agree with you. I don't know how guys figure out how to play through that stuff when they're not asked to all season long. It's tough. It's a tough adjustment for players to have to make because, you know, you're used to getting to certain spots and being able to. Now you got guys draped on you when you're trying to do that.
Tim, let me just interrupt you for 1 second. I'm really sorry. Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic is reporting the Yankees-Red Sox game tonight is postponed because of the Yankees' COVID-19 issue. So that's stunning news.
Yeah.
You know, just when you think you're past all this, Tim, and then something like this rears its ugly head. So they've canceled the game between the Yankees or postponed the game between the Yankees and the Red Sox. So we'll have further information as it becomes available, but that's according to Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic. That's shocking.
Wow, really shocking. And because like you said, you thought we're at a time now where you're watching sporting events on television, particularly right now for me, watching the NBA every night with these packed arenas, and it looks just like it did pre-COVID. So to get something like that, that is stunning.
Amazing. What was up with Drew Holiday yesterday? I mean, he was terrible.
Yeah, so, look, he's so important to them, and you know, I'm not exactly sure I can – make an excuse for him, but I will say this: he is expending so much energy picking up their guards full court that which is something he will never do in the regular season. Not anymore. You used to see that back in the day. There were guys on rosters that would pick guys up and turn them four times before you got to half court. They don't do that anymore in the NBA. Drew Holiday after game one, and I said this that night: if they needed to make an adjustment, if Drew Holiday's on the floor, he needs to be draped on Chris Paul. Period. Forget the switching, forget the drop coverage and all the stuff they did in the first game where Chris Paul looked like he was basically at a shoot-around and went for 30-plus without any contact. They decided in game two they're going to target Chris Paul. Booker's a different story. Like, because he's such a voracious shot-taker and he's hunting shots, you're going to have to hand him off to people with all the screens he's going to get off the ball. So I understand why that's going to be cut by committee. But when it comes to Chris Paul, if Drew Holiday's on the floor, he needs to be on Chris Paul, and he's to wear him down. And I think it's affecting both players. Clearly, Chris Paul's not the same. And I look at Drew Holiday, and I say, man, how can a guy be missing this much? And I say, hey, look, maybe that's something to do with it. He doesn't do that in the regular season. He's picking up their guards literally 75 feet every trip that he can. And over the course of a game, when you're not doing that in the regular season, you think about how much that's going to gash you. He's still taking the shots. He's trying to be aggressive. But I think that's got to be contributing to it. And then, look, there's always going to be a percentage of this. You never know this because you can't get inside a guy's head and figure out what's going on in there and his heart rate, figure out to what extent is the pressure affecting him a little bit. He's never been in this situation before. But I think the combination of the two are a reason why he's had some of these really bad shooting nights. And I do think that people at home watching it, you don't think that's a big deal of what those two guards are going through, one guy picking a guy at full court, like how that's wearing both of them out. Because I don't know any other explanation for what's going on with Chris Paul. He's a completely different player as this series has gone on. He's gotten worse every single game to the point he was invisible last night. So I'm attributing a lot of it to the defensive adjustment they've made to him.
Well, one thing last night that was interesting, though, is Paul was not good. But he went, I think, 5-for-13 from the floor. Drew Holiday, on the other hand, and he's done this in other games, including Game 7 against Brooklyn. When he's not feeling it, he shoots. He was 4-of-20 last night. At what point does that shooter-shoot mentality cease to be a good thing?
It's a great question. I think with him it's a different category because he, in particular, has gotten so much scrutiny on nights when he takes 10, 11, 12 shots because people are wondering, why is Drew Holiday having such a hard time finding his lane when he's on the floor with Giannis and Chris Middleton at the same time? I've covered a lot of games this year for the Bucks, and Drew Holiday had me scratching my head because I'm saying, where's the guy that I saw in New Orleans that was at times the best player on the floor some nights offensively, that was the guy that was running, 30 ball screens a game trying to get some offense, that was taking threes freely, and then he gets there. I thought when they added him to the roster, that might be the missing piece. But then much of the regular season, he just never seems comfortable to find his aggressiveness while those guys are on the floor. And I think he's gotten so much criticism for that now hell or high water, he's going to shoot the basketball, because the one thing he's not going to listen to anymore is that he was passive. He might have some bad shooting nights. Now, in game three, he won that game for them with what he did in the third quarter. He had four threes in the third quarter. He separated those two teams, and he got that entire roster to calm down. They weren't going to fall behind 3-0. He won that game in the third quarter offensively. So, he still can have moments, but he's just telling himself, no matter what, I'm not going to be the guy that's criticized because people don't think I'm being aggressive offensively. And that's where he's at now. So for him, it's a little bit different than some guys that are aggressive every night. And in some ways, it's obvious they don't have it. Maybe they adjust their game. I think Jrue Holiday needs to stay aggressive. It helps their team overall to know they've got a third guy out there trying to create offense.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Tim, I don't know if people in the know in the game felt this way, but I know it was whispered among some fans, the disparaging of Antetokounmpo. I think he has come up so big and has shown himself to be such a stud with the injury that he had. I think he's answered all questions. I don't care how the remaining three games go. This guy really has shown himself, hey, all you haters, all you doubters, you can shut up now because I'm doing everything I have to do.
Yeah, he's been spectacular, and I think the thing that's been a big breakthrough for their team, he is also willing now to let Chris Middleton be the primary ball handler in important moments, and he's willing to be a screen dive guy in those situations. Now, you go back for the last 2.5 years or even 2 years plus most of this year, you'd watch the Bucks, and you'd say to yourself, man, if this is how they're going to end games, if this is what they're going to go to out of a timeout in a one-possession game, is Giannis Antetokounmpo isolating at 30 feet. And when he doesn't have a three-point shot, he's not a good mid-range player. You know where he has to get on the floor, and there's five guys waiting on him to do it. And he's committing offensive fouls. He's taking bad shots. He's off balance. He goes to the line. He misses free throws. That's what it looked like for, most of the last 3 years. Chris Middleton is their best option in those situations because what it takes, and he showed it last night, you have to have the ball in the hands of a guy who can make any shot that is required based on the defense that he's seen. That's not Giannis Antetokounmpo. That's Chris Middleton. And so that's the final component for me for Giannis, because he does so many things in the course of the game to put you in position to win. But if you're in a tight game, he has to have that final part where he is egoless to allow Chris Middleton and to accept it, that this is a better place for us to go right now. And when they do that, the Bucks are a far better closing team than they have been in the past. So I give him a lot of credit for that, too. And then, obviously, the block he made last night, the play he made last night, to block Ayton at the rim, it's literally one of the most spectacular defensive plays I've ever witnessed.
Yeah, that'll
because
be his signature moment if they win.
LeBron's block's always going to be number one for me because of the scrutiny LeBron gets. And imagine him, if they don't win that series, what that block meant against Golden State. That a guy like that carries all this weight around his ankles because there are people waiting to pounce for him to come up short. So that's another ring he has on his legacy. This one, this is huge, too. This might be number two for me. Because to have your entire body facing the ball handler at 15 feet, have no idea where the guy went that you were guarding, and then spin out, take a baby step, and get above the block, above the square, to time that block without fouling him. It's truly remarkable. I watched that on it probably 15 times by now, and I still can't believe he was able to pull that off. I think there's one guy on the planet who could make that play, and it was Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Tim, if this turns out to not be a hold-serve home series, what's more likely to happen, the Bucks winning in Phoenix in Game 5 or the Suns winning in Milwaukee in Game 6?
Well, here's the problem. Look, and I never hedge. I'm confident in my picks, and I've been pretty successful over the years in picking series. Here's the problem. You're asking me a question based on my understanding of what Chris Paul is, and I don't know. I don't know. I can't believe I'm saying this based on the way he looked in the first game, because he's one of the stars in this series. There's four of them. And I'm saying he's right now an X factor. And an X factor to me is every night when I have to pick an X factor, it's I don't exactly know what I'm going to get out of this guy, but if this particular guy plays well, and usually that's a role player that I'll put an X factor label on, then that team has a better chance to win. Chris Paul's an X factor now because I have no idea what's wrong with him. I don't know if he's hurt, tired, his wrist is bothering. I don't know what it is, but he's not the same guy that he was in the first game of this series. And if he doesn't find that, it's far more likely that the Bucks win the next two games and end this thing at six. Now, if Chris Paul goes back home and he finds his legs and he finds his energy and he's aggressive and he's controlling the game, then I think it's more likely that the Suns would come back and win in Milwaukee in game six.
Very quickly, do you think that this could be that Chris Paul's 36 years old and there's a long season and it's finally catching up with him?
Definitely. And like I said earlier, you know, Jrue Holiday is a thick, strong guard. He's built like a strong safety. He slides his feet. They're allowing him to get his forearms into Chris Paul and bump him. I just think that the attrition of three games of dealing with Jrue Holiday, every trip up the floor, I think if the Suns want to find Chris Paul's legs, you've got to let other people handle the ball initially.
Right.
Give it up. Let somebody else handle the ball. Get up the floor. And then come back out. And when you receive the ball, be in a position now where you can run a ball screen and you don't have to do all this extra dribbling. Because I think it absolutely is affecting him because of his age, this stage of his career, this deep into the season. And this is a guy that's had a lot of injuries throughout the course of his career in the postseason. This is a guy that is feeling it because he looked absolutely gassed last night. He had no juice for 48 minutes. I kept waiting for a spurt. Never came. Yep. So I think, yeah, you're right. It is age, but it's also the effect of Jrue Holiday and his defensive presence on Chris Paul and his pursuit of him. I think it's thrown him off his game, and that's, to me, the key to this entire series. If Chris Paul is a mediocre player going forward, they cannot beat the Bucks. Period.
Tim, great stuff as always. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, you got it, guys.
All right, the big news, Yankees and the Red Sox postponed tonight. Mm-hmm. There seems to be some sort of preponderance of COVID protocol happening with the Yankees, so Major League Baseball has postponed the game. We're going to get the latest information from Buster Olney in just a moment. He's got what's going on there, why this has happened on a team that's over 85% vaccinated. So we'll find out from Buster when we get back right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.